You are listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, and this is Book Lovers Cafe. Book Lovers Cafe is a program of author interviews and book reviews with a local perspective. I'm your host, Chris Wilson, and you can listen to this program every Wednesday, 5 o'clock after calendar, and sometimes on Sunday at 12:30. Today, we're going to be talking to author, poet, raconteur, Bill Ransom. And Bill has lived here and abouts in the Pacific Northwest for all of his life. And we're going to find out a lot about how his life impacts his writing today. He's the founder of the Port Townsend Writing Conference at Fort Worden, and with our own Don Trethaway and Joe Wheeler, one of the founders of Centrum. So we have a lot to be thankful for these three men. He is a featured author this year at the Writers' Conference, and he will be leading a workshop on hybrid genres, pretty much based on his book, Learning the Ropes, A Creative Autobiography. So that's the work that we're going to be really focusing on today. So thank you so much for coming in, Bill.
I'm delighted to be here. Thanks, Chris.
Okay. So Bill has been on the air live, but this is the first time that he's going to be part of one of our talk shows, so to speak. And I'd like to start today, Bill, with a short story from Learning the Ropes, A Creative Autobiography. And this story is called The Golden Rule Grocery. So why don't you tell us about it and then give us a read.
The Golden Rule Grocery is one of my first memories in Puyallup. It was a door down from my grandparents' place, and as a little kid, I got to walk over there with a list and bring things back, and, you know, that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still there. And it's the little corner grocery actually across the tracks from the high school. So it gets, of course, all the high school kids go there at lunchtime.
I'm so glad it's still there.
And the guy who owned it at the time, his name was Lance, he gave everybody credit. And it was, everybody had just come home from the war. And so everybody was broke.
Mm-hmm.
And that was important. And I always remembered that he never asked anybody to pay a bill. You paid it when you got ready to pay it.
Mm-hmm.
And so he lived up to the name of his grocery, which I thought was cool, even as a kid, you know.
I never would have thought that was the real name of the grocery store.
Yeah. Okay. And Aldrich's, when I moved here, when he was still alive, was very much like that, only bigger.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, if you went upstairs and purchased something out of a bin, you got it for the price it was put in the bin for, not the new price that it could be. So Aldrich's was like that too.
Mm-hmm.
So the Golden Rule Grocery. One day the grocer came out to sweep the walk and saw the clouds raining blood in the streets. At first, he could not believe it was blood. He thought he was seeing things. But why would I see that? He wondered. Aloud, he muttered, "This is bad for business." He silently thanked his wife for the green awnings that she'd made him buy, shook his broom at the offending sky, and hurried inside to talk with the butcher. The butcher, a fastidious man, agreed. "A little blood goes a long way," he said. "People don't like to touch it, you know, or smell it. That's why I wipe down each steak and chop and seal every package tight. My wife won't let me touch her unless I bleach my hands at night. Blood is truly a bad business." Not a car drove the slippery streets, not a customer graced the door. The grocer would close the shop, except then he'd have to walk home, and he did not want to walk alone in all that blood. For the fourth time, he rearranged his stubborn carrots, sprinkled his broccoli. The butcher put his chickens on sale and remopped the twice-mopped floor. Still, the blood rain fell. "I hope it lets up," the grocer said, his eyes distant and his frown genuine. "Nothing lasts forever," the butcher replied. People don't think of food when there's blood in the streets. People always think of food, the butcher said. Not with the blood. They talked of unhooking the long awning from the front of the building to stretch across the street, but even the butcher didn't want to wade in the blood to do it. They waved and shouted to the baker across the way and to the watchmaker. What is this weather? They asked, turning up their hands. Bloody awful, the watchmaker shouted back, and they all laughed a nervous laugh that frightened the grocer more than the blood. Then, as suddenly as it started, the blood rain stopped. The butcher praised the Lord and raised the price of chicken, but the grocer hurried inside for his garden hose and his bleach. He hosed down the awnings, the sidewalk, and the street as far as his hose could reach, disinfecting as he went. The sun baked the remaining blood to the sides of the building and to the streets. It dried quickly and flaked off, then rode away in a rusty cloud on a maverick wind to rain itself on another town. When the first stunned and blinking customer entered the shop, the grocer gave him a hug and a head of lettuce. He hugged each of his customers as they came in, men and women and children, and he gave each of them something to eat, something to sustain them and refresh them from their inhuman ordeal of isolation and bad blood.
Okay, so I read this a couple of times, and I found it calming and horrific. And I'd like to hear, you know, I think it has something to say about us as human beings. Can you tell me a little bit about what you were trying to say in the story?
Yes. I wrote this after working in Central America in several of the civil wars there. And I volunteered, in some cases I trained firefighters in Guatemala and in Nicaragua, and in all three places, Salvador, I worked and volunteered in some medical clinics. And so one day in the middle of town in Guatemala City, I happened to have to go to town, and there was a machine gun set up in the middle of the street right in front of my hotel. And so walked by that every place. And I had a buddy there, a Guatemalan guy. And I said, you know, how do you walk by that every day? You know, doesn't it make you a little nervous? He said something to the effect of, well, it's not exactly a sculpture, but what else are we to do? Mm-hmm. You have to go to work. You have to shop. You have to come home. Most days, it's just there, you know. And when I got home here, I drove by the Indian Island torpedo station. And I thought, boy, you know, our department is the backup department for Indian Island. And ho-hum, mm-hmm. You know, I clam over there and so forth. So it's a similar thing. I've let it become an object, you know, in my life. And then I thought about the wars there themselves and how they came and went. And I worked at the village level with people who had nothing to do with any of that. Something came into their village, killed a bunch of people, and left. It was like a tornado in Kansas, or, you know it's out there, and there's a season for it, and maybe it won't come to your village. Mm-hmm. But once it has, it's on to another village.
The blood dries, it flakes off, it blows away, yeah. And we go on to the next town. That's incredibly powerful. And I'd like to say that later on in this book, there are several other poems and short stories that take place in Central America. And they're incredible to read right now during this immigration crisis. I would love to send your book to Jeff Sessions. I might just do that anyway.
He already knows about it.
I bet he does.
I asked the FBI for my paperwork in the Freedom of Information Act, and I got it.
Okay. Well, this is we're talking to Bill Ransom, and that story was from Learning the Ropes, a creative autobiography. It's got so many parts of your life in it. Let's go back to the beginning. After your childhood, you went to work kind of, you know, right away in the fields. There's mm-hmm. some of that in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, our family did that and had for several generations ahead of me in mm-hmm. Puyallup. And most of us on both sides had different ideas of work. It was more like a hunter-gatherer family on my mother's side and my father's side. And so there we had worked with, done what immigrants do now and natives here were doing then, and that is picking crops, picking pine cones, cutting Christmas trees, cutting Christmas boughs, mm-hmm. doing brush.
And there's also some stories about young boys and young men that really gave me a window into kind of masculine play and the sense psyche that I was unaware of, and was really fascinating. Were very fascinating glimpses of guys together and play and mm-hmm. in chicanery. So that's another reason to read this book. It's so good.
Those stories display my relief that my daughter was a girl.
I guess so.
Because I don't think I could have stood a kid like me.
Anyway, we won't go into that too far, but I do encourage you to pick up this book. And then also, I do want to get the story of you and the guys kind of deciding really in the early 70s, about what to do with this sort of falling apart fort, Fort Worden, that mm-hmm. was just, you know, kind of closing down, right?
Yeah, and we kind of got at it the back way. Joe was looking for a place because in our conversations, just the first few months we all got together doing poets in the schools or artists in the schools, mm-hmm. Don reminds mm-hmm. me that I forget about.
Right.
Those artists. So we had a lot of conversations about what we've learned, a lot of stuff doing this. What else might we do? And I had said, I have worked at a couple of conferences and I'd like to bring some of those famous people to me because I can't go to New York all the time. I can't go to, you know,
Iowa.
Schmooze.
Or Bread Loaf.
Yeah. So. Actually, I got hired at Bread Loaf before that, so that's part of what I was thinking of. It was a good model.
Great idea.
Yeah, and I had some tweaks to it, but and then Joe was seriously kind of looking for a place, but now he was fully employed.
Oh.
So he was still employed at Stadium High School, mm-hmm. And he wisely did not give up that job until, you know, things were pretty established. And even then, it was a total risk mm-hmm. the first 3 years. So I thought he was probably the bravest one of all of us. None of us had had a chance to get settled yet. We'd just gotten hired in the Artists in Schools program.
And that's not kind of full time or anything.
Oh, no, it was more than full time.
Oh, it was?
Oh,
okay.
Yes.
All right, great.
We were pioneering, so.
Oh, okay.
The reason we got up here was extra work, mm-hmm. and that was someone who I can name, Roseanne Nowak, was on the school board here in Port Townsend and had heard of this program and wanted a demonstration for the school board and other people. So we came up and did a little thing for them and made them do some writing and art, and they decided they wanted it. So we toured around, you know, since we were up here. And we also had the same appointments at Squim, Port Angeles, and Quil Saint. They were all interested. And then we saw Fort Worden and asked around, and it seemed to be empty. And it looked...
You laugh now, don't we?
It looked... It had chest-high grass everywhere, and so there were big buildings with big windows, so Don lit up about that, you know, and there were just lots of buildings and a lot of nature, so I lit up about that. And we got back, and Joe had just been to Olympia, and he plunked a pamphlet down on the table and said, "Fort for rent, never fired a shot at an enemy." And somehow the state was trying to arrange some kind of ownership of the fort. I think legally, by federal law, it should have gone to a local tribe.
Mm-hmm.
Once it was abandoned. But the state parks was interested, but they couldn't afford it. So Joe basically said, "Well, hey, why don't you fix up the buildings? And each building you fix up, we'll rent. We'll guarantee. We'll rent them. We'll fill them with people."
Wow.
And so we did it. We got an office where we each got a desk. Don and I shared a desk. Joe got his own desk.
Well, you know, this is great. And it's really good to have a glimpse of really, you know, hey, let's start a show. We can mm-hmm. charge a quarter. I think I read that somewhere.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what we did.
And look what we've got now.
The Mickey Rooney model.
That's right. So I'm talking to Bill Ransom, and he's here today, and he's going to be here next month for the Port Townsend Writers Conference, right here in Port Townsend, right here at Fort Worden, and we will all be there too. In some of your other work, you kind of engaged us with writing about blood again, being an EMT and doing work at CPR and being a firefighter. Was that volunteer? Was that here in Jefferson County?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that.
It was both volunteer and paid. I was a volunteer with what was then District 6. It's now part of, they're all part of East Jefferson Mm-hmm. Fire and Aid. I came out of that was then called the Cape George Department, and I came out of the Miller Road Station. And as a result, within a couple of months of joining the department, the chief convinced me that nobody wanted to be an EMT. They didn't have any EMTs at that point, and so I had to be an EMT. So.
Oh. Okay.
Buckle up.
Go for it.
So I did, and I was interested anyway, so it worked out. And then I wound up working at the hospital, which in itself was a long story, in the emergency room in a couple of roles because I had a couple of skills. So as an additional advanced life support person to be available there, also, I could type.
Okay, so these kinds of experiences, making money and, you know, becoming useful in the community, they found their way into your writing and makes your writing very gripping and, you know, sort of you are there kind of writing, which is, you know, really wonderful to read. There's a story called Firebugs. Tell the audience a little bit about that and how you worked with the kid mm-hmm. in that story.
Well, again, the Miller Road Fire Hall, so people can know, now that everybody is no longer here that mm-hmm. was there then, Miller Road is close to Arcadia. And so we had a couple calls to Arcadia.
Really? Oh, see, I didn't know if this was made up. Okay, this is cool.
No. This one isn't even fiction.
Okay.
I don't put, unless an editor asks, I don't distinguish between mm-hmm. fiction and nonfiction.
Mm-hmm.
I like people to wonder. Anyway, that one's not fiction. So they were fairly new people at the time, and there was a teenage boy. And so the third time we showed up there, it was like a chicken coop, but it was up near the house. And to the bedroom upstairs, they only had an outside stairwell.
And I want to clarify that these are three fire calls, that fires have been set at this location.
Yeah, piddly little fires. So it's just somebody playing around, hence suspicion of the teenager immediately. And you'll see why later. So we got there, and it was nothing again. But so we had seen the kid before. When a kid doesn't come out to look at the fire, he's the number one suspect.
Okay, parents, listen to this.
So we went up there, and we tried to be as big as possible. We had all of our gear on, and crowded him in his room, and he was sitting there reading a math book. Very casually. And so we bumped around in his room and handled his things and grumbled and said things like, you know, there are too many fires here and we're volunteers and we don't have to come. No, we don't have to come. This is a pain in the butt. I'm not coming anymore. Bill, are you coming anymore? No, I'm not coming. And so we left. And then usually after a call, almost always after a call, we do a little regroup and talk about it and use it as an exercise. So we loaded up with water and went back to the station to talk. And on the way, Mike and I were chatting, and he was laughing. And it turns out that we both started big fires when we were that kid's. Well, actually, we were younger than that kid. And firefighters came, and they knew it was us, and they did the same thing to us, and they scared the living crap out of us. And so we became firefighters. So we got back to the station for the general meeting, and I said, hey, how many of you guys started a really big fire when you were kids? All hands went up. That's your fire department, ladies and gentlemen.
And they know
firebugs to the core.
Firebugs, and they learned their lessons, and now they know how to catch those young firebugs. You're listening to Book Lovers Cafe. I'm your host, Chris Wilson, and I have the privilege to be talking to Bill Ransom today. And Bill is telling us about his life, his writing life, and the Port Townsend Writers Conference coming up in July. Every year. So, you know, if you're hearing this in December, then, you know, it's coming up again in July. So tell us a little bit about poetry. You know, I can see where these stories are coming from. So have you been writing poetry all along?
I have, actually. I did that longer. My first publication was a very short story. They spelled my name wrong, so it was a good, humbling entry into the world of writing. But from then on, I don't know why, but I chose to go the poetry route. And I still loved fiction. That was mainly what I studied and read. Always had a story going on the side, but I didn't push them much. I was really a lot more interested in poetry. And at that time in the 70s, I was really interested in book-length poetry, like Patterson and The Book of Nightmares. So I wrote a couple of long poems. Last Rites was one of them. And a couple of my poetry pals were doing the same.
So I'd like to, if you wouldn't mind, to read a poem now that I think will resonate with some of our listeners. This one's called Living Will, and it is from Learning the Ropes.
Living Will, burn me. Pay the fine, stand aside, and sift me through wind. Wish I could see myself flake down over ferns and moss, backs of beetles and crumbling rock. I never looked better. Remember my eyes to the sun. My daughter, hold her tight as earth. Look up these certain women. Be discreet as the blush I never had. It's all right. Their touch, like me, is gone. A mouthful of ash and dust in the corners, that's what I own. Peddle 'em if you can. If you're my wife, sorry, I hoard no secret wealth.
hoard no secret wealth, but a wealth of images and of great words. So you also had an association with a famous author who was here in town, and that's Frank Herbert.
Mm-hmm.
And you wrote three books with him.
Mm-hmm.
I won't get into how that all came to be and exactly how do you collaborate with a science fiction author. Or is it called speculative fiction? Which do you prefer?
I don't prefer. I just prefer that it not be called fantasy.
Oh, okay.
Because it is, you know, has a science base to it.
Yes, yes. So six of these, I mean, three books you wrote on your own, three books you collaborated with him, and they are, you know, novels, they're thrillers, they're psychothrillers, they're based on, you know, a lot of science-based about mm-hmm. things that could happen and could be happening now, for all we know. I'd like you to read another poem,
mm-hmm.
Which you kind of dedicated to Frank. And, you know, I felt that it was based, you know, on our peninsula or mm-hmm. close by. And that's called Letter from the Lost Notebooks.
Yeah. Our families go back. He's from the Puyallup Valley. He was born in the same hospital that my dad and my daughter and my daughter's mother were born in.
Mm-hmm.
And lived across the river from us. And his mother's cousin married one of my mother's cousins back when. So our connection was always local. We knew of each other, but we didn't meet till we came to Port Townsend. And we immediately had a great time. It was a lot of fun. Letter from the Lost Notebooks for Frank Herbert. Starting from where the road forks, we lose time and we lose the lives that might have followed us here. We lock our memories in the car, leave the keys on the muffler, and begin the slow, drizzling climb. It always rains here in the valley, to the flatlands, somewhere near the top. Notice as we climb whole huckleberry bushes stripped of leaves and limbs, bare, stoking up for winter. You'll notice, too, that by switching back on ourselves, we walk quite a way and make very little ground. If making ground is what you're after, you wouldn't have come this far. If you came here with a lover or a friend, don't be surprised if you're now alone. These things happen up here. You reach the high flatlands in late afternoon. The rain settles into haze and drops itself patch by patch into the valleys and crannies below. This high up, there's never a hurry, so look over the meadow and watch as the sky clears for sundown how those old boulders sit hunched and waiting. Listen. The wind scribbles something slight on their faces. Sleep out there tonight among them, and know that the dreams they send may be more than you can wake up from.
Okay, listeners, it's time for the High Divide, the switchbacks up to Mount Townsend, or the Goat Switchback Trail on Hurricane Ridge. You have been listening to Book Lovers Cafe. It's a program for everyone who hasn't read everything. We're talking to Bill Ransom. I'm so glad he laughed. And we reviewed his books, Learning the Ropes, a creative autobiography. You can join me next time to talk more about books and authors. I'm your host, Chris Wilson. You can listen to past shows and other programs on the podcast page right on the website, kptz.org. You can make a donation to the station as well. Thanks so much for all the volunteers and supporters who make this station possible. Join me next time. Bye for now.